Well, Amy and Brandon have said good morning to you. What a powerful way to start our morning, and hopefully continue that. Now we've been going through the Gospel of Matthew, and Matthew is telling the story of Jesus inviting people into this kind of relationship that we've been singing about and talking about. And then the particular chapter where we are today, Jesus has this long discussion or long monologue about the future. And which I find fascinating, because I think about how I think about the future, how people I talk to and friends with think about the future. And for us, the future, the way we talk about the future is a little bit different than Jesus tends to talk about it. For some of us, the future is a way that, like, we can just seems a very disconnected from reality in a lot of ways. Like, we feel like maybe for some of us that it doesn't matter how we live today, it doesn't matter how we live tomorrow, it's not going to affect anything that's coming in the future. Maybe for some of us, the future represents this idea of, like, you can put off things that you need to do today because you'll deal with it later. Like, if you've ever moved, when we moved out here, we had some of those boxes. You know those boxes that you have all sorts of paper and stuff in that, like, you've been meaning to go through? And then you move one day, and you're like, yeah, we'll just deal with it when we get there. And then you move some other time, and you find that same box is still there. And for a lot of people, I think we think of the future that way, that, like, you know, I'll just deal with it when it comes in that future time. But Jesus has this interesting perspective on the future that we're going to hear more of today, is that, like, somehow the future is connected to what happens now. That, like, almost if we could put ourselves in the future and look back from that perspective, we might see how we live and operate now is different than what we think. I was having dinner with a friend just the other night, and we had who we shared some life experience with several years ago. We were talking about that experience, and we were talking about the interesting dynamic of how that experience seems in the moment and how it looks now looking years later. Maybe you've had that experience in life. That almost if we could go to the future, if we could go ahead a little bit and look back, that maybe we would see our present day in a way that maybe we don't see while we're in the middle of it. That's what Jesus, in essence, is talking about in this chapter we're going to look at today, that he gives this picture of the future, of that God's going to do something, and he's not just talking about, like, let's just leave it out there, let's just pack it in a box, and we'll deal with it later. He's saying, you know what? Because you're going over here, because that's going to happen in the future, we can see and glimpse a bit of that here now. To put it another way, it's like Jesus is taking this idea of what's going to happen in the future, and it brings and infuses hope into how people live, not only in his day, but also you and me here today. That the idea that the ways that you and I choose to live, that if you're a follower of Jesus, you choose to live your life in following Jesus as a disciple, a follower, a learner of Jesus, if you choose to do that, it's not a waste. That your small decisions aren't wasted, that they're part and they're connected to a future that God's bringing about, and he's bringing about through people like you and me right now. Today we're going to be Matthew chapter 24. And again, we're in the middle of a conversation where Jesus is talking to his disciples, and to give you a bit of context, the conversation is around this topic of the future, or in this language, in their religious perspective, this idea of the end of the age. For them, in Jesus' day, the end of the age represented a time in which God's future would kind of collide with the present. This moment when God would intervene in full in the world. They saw glimpses of it in God's intervention, but this would be the moment. The end of the age would be this mark where God sets the world right, where justice and peace and hope and all of these things are brought to full in the present day. And so the disciples, the followers of Jesus, ask him, Jesus, when is this going to happen? Can you tell us about this future age, this end of the age? Can you tell us when this will happen, what this will look like? And so that's the conversation they're in. We pick it up midway through chapter 24, beginning in verse 29 through 35. Jesus says these words. He says, immediately after the distress of those days, you can look back later and read the verses before, and he quotes from the prophet Isaiah. He said, the sun will be darkened, the moon will not give its light, the stars will fall from the sky, and the heavenly bodies will be shaken. Then will appear the sign of the Son of Man in heaven. And then all the peoples of the earth will mourn when they see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. And he will send his angels with a loud trumpet call, and they will gather his elect from the four winds, from one end of the heavens to the other. And he goes on, he says, now learn this lesson from the fig tree. As soon as its twigs get tender and its leaves come out, you know that summer is near. Even so, when you see all these things, you know that that is near, right at the door. Truly, I tell you, this generation will certainly not pass away until all these things have happened. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words, this promise, will never pass away. There's a lot in there. We won't have time to get through it all, but a couple of things that stand out. Jesus talks about a time in which he quotes the prophet Isaiah, the stars or the heavens will be shaken. This is prophetic language back from the Old Testament prophets that they talk about. It imagines this kind of like this image of like a world that seems in chaos, a world that seems out of control is the language they use. The heavens are shaken. Maybe you even get a sense of that here today. You may watch the news from time to time and go, oh my goodness, it just seems like everything is out of control right now. If you've ever felt that, you get a glimpse of some of this language that they're talking about here. Jesus is talking about a day in which the world seems out of control, but he also brings good news into that. He says, here's the good news, though, is that God is not absent. It's not like God's like, well, you did this yourself, so good luck with that. No, Jesus describes God as one who's active, involved, not leaving the world to deal with its own chaos, but somehow doing something in it to change the world. And he's going to do this, Jesus says, through this coming of the Son of Man. Now, if you were here last week, Mark Mitchell, our lead pastor, talked about this. And he talked about this idea of the Son of Man. And the Son of Man, just a quick little detour, reminder, it's an important image and idea in Jesus' teaching. The Son of Man comes from the Old Testament teaching of Daniel. Daniel has this dream, and he has this dream of a world at chaos, much like this. And he says there will be a Son of Man, there will be this figure that will come and will have the power and the authority of God. And this person, this figure, will set the world right. And so the coming of the Son of Man is this idea of vindication, of this person, this one being seen as the one through whom God will bring about a new creation. This is the hope. This is what Jesus constantly points to, is that God has not left the world to its own devices, but that he is doing something. And Jesus continually says, look, he's doing something through me. God's bringing about new creation through Jesus. And Jesus says that this generation will see it. Now, that's a phrase that has a lot of question around it. What does it mean? Well, again, Mark talked last week about how people, scholars, how any of us read this chapter, chapter 24. You can read it, one option is you can read it as all happening and all being fulfilled around Jesus' time up to the fall of Jerusalem by Rome in AD 70. You could read this as completely future, disconnected from what Jesus was happening in his world, disconnected from our world. Probably better is to read this a little bit of a blend of both. That Jesus is saying, look, you're going to see this vindication. You're going to see how God's going to start to put the world right. You're not going to get the full realization, but you're going to see a glimpse of it. You're going to see like a first fruits of it. I think Jesus here is talking about his upcoming death and resurrection. That he will defeat the powers of the world. He will defeat the things that plague humanity. The things in us that, like as Brandon so well led us in, that we just constantly need to come back and surrender. That Jesus, through his death and resurrection, defeats that, conquers that, that as we sang, begins to put us whole again. And then the Apostle Paul called it his resurrection like a first fruits, like a glimpse of something that's going to come more in the future. Maybe think about a tree. I saw a tree the other day, even in the midst of all this rain and cold, I saw a tree that all of its leaves were gone, except on the very end of the branches, there were new, like these small, new green leaves starting to burst. Now, I was not confused. I did not imagine this tree that was barren except for the beginning and the end of those branches. I did not think like, well, that tree's fully in bloom. But I could see that, and I could imagine, hey, in a few months, it might stop raining. We're not going to be committed to this the rest of our summer. There's going to be growth that comes. Paul says the resurrection of Jesus, the power of it, is that it's almost like that thing. It's like you get a glimpse of what God will one day do in full. It has, you can see it. It has realities here and now. And so I think Jesus is talking about that. He's talking about, hey, something's getting about to get started with his death and resurrection that will point the way, that will connect to God's future. So Jesus describes this world in chaos, but he says God will not leave the world in chaos. He's going to do something, and he's doing something through the Son of Man, this person of Jesus. And people will see this vindication through his resurrection. It will defeat the powers of the world. It will defeat the things in us that plague us as human beings, that stop us from wholeness and the fullness of life. Sounds pretty good. And so you can imagine the question, and Jesus kind of preempts, you can imagine the question of the disciples, like, all right, Jesus, how's this going to happen? When's it going to happen? Let's get this show on the road. And Jesus says, well, all of this, this full realization that's about to come, you're going to see a glimpse of it now, but the full realization of that life that you so long for in the future, it's going to come in a way that's really unexpected. The timing of it is unexpected. Listen to the next set of verses, verse 36 through 44. He says, about that day or hour, no one knows, not even the angels in heaven, nor the Son, but only God the Father. As it was in the days of Noah, so it will be at the coming of the Son of Man. For in the days before the flood, people were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, up to the day that Noah entered the ark. And they knew nothing about what would happen until the flood came and took them all away. That is how it will be at the coming of the Son of Man. Two men will be in a field, one will be taken, the other left. Two women will be grinding with a handmill, one will be taken, the other left. Therefore, keep watch. You do not know on what day your Lord will come. But understand this, if the owner of the house had come at the time of night the thief was coming, he would have kept watch and would not have let his house been broken into. So you also must be ready, because the Son of Man will come in an hour when you do not expect him. Jesus says this full realization that they're going to see a glimpse of in the resurrection, this full realization is going to come at an unexpected time. And again, there's a lot in this passage which we don't have time to really get into in detail, but you get the sense that Jesus is saying, he says, like, look, you can look back in our history. Look back at like the time of Noah, right before the big flood, if you're familiar with the story of Noah. He's like, people were going about their daily routine unaware that the world was dramatically about to be changed. He's like, or picture like people at work in a field, two people at work in a field, or two people at work at a mill. He's like, their lives could change in a minute. There's this suddenness about what Jesus is saying. Imagine the thief, he says. He uses that image. Like, there's this sense of surprise. There's this sense of unexpected. He's like, God is doing something in the world. The full realization of it's going to come at a time where people don't expect, and it may end up changing people's relationships with one another because of their relationship with Jesus. The world's about to be changed, Jesus says. And so his advice to people in his day, his advice to people, I think, still in our day, he says, keep watch. Stay alert. Look. Observe. In other words, see that the present day has meaning and purpose. Do you hear Jesus speaking purpose and meaning into things that we often kind of run right by? I think Jesus is saying, in essence, like, keep watch. Keep alert to how the world works, for example. Find and look for ways that God and his divine work is at work all around you, in your relationships, at work, at home. There are ways that God is at work all around you. And Jesus, in essence, I think, is saying, like, keep an eye out for that. Don't get dulled to this idea that now doesn't matter. Keep alert. Keep watch. I think it also is like, keep watch that you don't start to believe a story that isn't the real story. Don't get deluded by a story that says there's nothing coming. Don't get deluded by a story that says what you do, how you spend your time, how you parent, how you are as a spouse. Don't get deluded by a story that says that doesn't matter. It does matter. Jesus is starting to draw a bridge that you could, how you live now in each of those arenas, could start to bring God's future into view. Like a few leaves on the end of the tree start to draw a picture of what will be soon in full. Jesus says, keep watch. You don't know when it's going to happen. There's a sense of urgency about Jesus. There's also a sense of meaning, I think, that he speaks into everyday life. I think for a lot of us, we can miss. If you don't see it, then you can start to see it in this next set of verses. Because the surprising thing about this, as Jesus finishes or comes to a close on this language of the future, although he'll have some parables that will kind of give more image to it as we go forward in the text. But the surprising thing is Jesus takes all of this future language, and at the end of this, he gives his audience something for them to do now. Listen to this language around faithfulness. He says this in verse 45. He says, "Who then is faithful and a wise servant, whom the master has put in charge of the servants in his household to give them their food at the proper time? It will be good for that servant whose master finds him doing so when he returns. Truly I tell you, he will put him in charge of all his possessions. But suppose that the servant is wicked and says to himself, my master is staying away a long time. In other words, then what I do now doesn't matter." Jesus is like, no, don't start thinking that way. What you do now matters. But suppose that, and then he begins to beat his fellow servants. It gets really dark and dramatic here, to eat and drink with drunkards. And the master of the servant will come on a day when he does not expect him, in an hour he is not aware. He will cut him to pieces, assign him to a place with the hypocrites where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. There you go. We can talk about that part a little bit later. But this idea that Jesus is saying, in essence, that what people do now matters. He's calling his audience, he says, in essence, like, be faithful. Live the type of life that God's calling you to live. And if you do, you'll find when you get to the future, God's future world that he's bringing about, you're going to see that faithfulness is part of that. You're not wasting your life if you spend your life on something that won't waste away. You don't waste your life if you're doing things that will be part of God's future that he is going to create in full one day and now is starting to bring it about. Keep watch. Stay alert. They could miss out. They don't have to live this way. They don't have to live as Jesus is calling them to live. But he says, okay, if you don't, you're going to find a future that you don't want to be a part of. You're going to find a future apart from God. This is centered around how people are connected to Jesus. And he says, look, as you start to live this, as you live as a learner, a follower of Jesus, you are actually doing the things of the future here and now. Jesus is drawing a connection between the present and the future. He's speaking value and meaning into how you and I live here and now. Be faithful now, he says, for it will lead to something better in the future. It's almost this idea, I like to think of it this way, that what you do now moves the world a bit closer to how it should be. How you parent now, if you're parenting as Jesus is calling you to parent, you're starting to move the world a bit closer as it should be. You work this week with integrity and honesty, you're starting to move the world a bit closer to how it should be. You fight for justice for those who don't have a voice, you're starting to move the world a bit closer to how it should be. There's a lot of people stop when they read Jesus, his teaching and his actions, and they're like, it's either way out there, completely disconnected, or maybe a bit for this person, or maybe a bit for that person. They miss that Jesus is giving them something to do. That because God's going to create something new in the future, that new creation can start now. Let me give you two examples that I hope will kind of bring this to life a little bit. One from interaction Jesus had just a few chapters ago, and one from my corporate experience. First, Matthew 19. It won't be on the screen. You can just listen. But in Matthew chapter 19, a young man comes to Jesus, and he says to Jesus, "How do I inherit eternal life?" In other words, how do I get to be a part? It's the same question, really, that the disciples had. How do I get to be a part of this age to come, this world that God's creating? And the interesting and fascinating things that Jesus tells him, responds with, is that Jesus gives him things to do now. He recycles some of the Old Testament commands. Like, it wasn't Jesus didn't say, well, just hang out because the future's coming. It doesn't really matter what you do now. Jesus says, in essence, like, there are things to do now. You want to be a part of what God's doing in the future, there are things to do now. There are things that start to bring that future here and now. That man thought the present and the future were disconnected. Jesus says there's more of a connection than you think. That by living as God's designing for the future, as God's designing this new world, living that way now actually brings a glimpse of that new world into the future. That by doing that, you start to move the world a bit closer, he tells that man. Second example. Years ago in my corporate experience, I joined a group, and it was one of those groups in our environment in a large setting where this was the group that everyone looked down upon. This was the group that was kind of like the low group. This was the group that everyone dumped all their problems on, all their projects on that they couldn't accomplish. It was really a problem group. There were a number of reasons for that, but that's just where this group was when I joined this particular team. And one of the projects that this group was tasked to do was a project that other groups, that probably a half a dozen people working overtime for months, had not been able to do. And as I joined this team from a different team, I started to get into this group and realize, oh my goodness, I actually have some experience years ago, and I have some knowledge in a previous setting that actually could help us solve this project that no one else could be able to solve. And so we worked together as a team, and over a couple months, we ended up solving this problem that other teams could not solve, despite the overtime and all sorts of things that management had offered them. And something dramatic shifted in how our team was viewed within the company, within our department. And you kind of go, well, that's not a big deal. I think it's a big deal. I think if you find ways that how you live and work can actually change people's perspective. In other words, we can start to move that team, starting to move it a bit closer to how it should be. What you and I do on a daily basis matters. It's part of bringing this future into the present. You can move families. You can move your family. You can move your marriage. You can move your identity as a single person closer to how it should be. You don't have to just wait for something in the future. It's not like you just check out now. There are things for you to do now because following Jesus means yes to Jesus now and yes along the way. It matters. You're bringing a glimpse of God's future into the present. Jesus is giving people in his day, giving people like you and me a task, a mission. And this is what so fascinates me about Jesus. He wasn't giving a lecture. He was giving people a task to do in the world. It's like the people who would be with God for the future are sent to do something with God in the present, because these two things are more connected than we think. The beautiful thing, as we sang earlier, is that new work, that creation, God started, and he started that with you. He pulled off chains, he pulled off death, he pulled off those things that plague us as human beings. And Jesus died for you. He died to give you new life. It's grace, as we sang about earlier, that makes you whole again. That new creation starts with you. And once you say yes to Jesus, that new creation continues through you, wherever you are. I mean, you wonder, like, well, what do we do with this kind of teaching about Jesus and about the future? How do we take any kind of application out of that? I think that's where the application is. I think if you know that and you've said yes to Jesus and to the new creation of life that he's offered you, and you know and see that you're part of extending new creation right where you are, then you start to see your world a lot different. You start to keep watch in ways that maybe you've never kept watch before. Like, for example, you have influence. I love talking about this. I know I talk about it a lot. But you have influence with people that maybe no one else has influence with. You have power. I know that's a dangerous word, but you have leverage. You have authority, however you want to talk about it. You have power, authority, leverage, influence. People look to you in certain ways that they may not look to other people. I think you're there for a reason. I think you have that power, authority. I think you're in that position for a purpose. Keep watch. Maybe God will show you how that purpose starts to take form. Or think about this. Think about situations that are difficult. I know that's like, for me, that's where perspective starts to quickly lose. Maybe you're in a difficult situation. Maybe you're in a difficult work environment because no one else could do it. Maybe God has you right there to start turning the thing a little bit closer to how it should be. Yeah, we did that in my corporate experience. It wasn't easy. I kind of blew through a lot of the dynamics of the story. But you do at the end of it kind of go, this is a good thing, not just because this project was completed, but because something shifted in our system, in our organization because of that. Maybe you're where you are because God's going to use you and is using you to bring the change that needs to happen. God has invited you to new life through Jesus, and when you say yes to him, you are saying yes to bringing that new creation, glimpses of God's future, right where you are, wherever you are. It's a good thing. It's a task and a mission that God's given to people. So maybe you need to ask yourself, where am I? Not like an existential way. I know you're here in the Fox Theater, all that. Like, no, but where am I? Maybe you just need to look around and say, "Where? What positions, what places, what people am I among, where am I going? Where am I going to be this week that I am there to bring about a glimpse of new creation?" What if you viewed who you are and the relationships you have as one who is sent to those people, to sent to those places, to bring a glimpse of something good and just, of peace, of the things of God's future here and now. What you do now starts to move the world, your world, a bit closer to where it should be. We're not trudging along. You're not trudging along. We don't have to find ways to escape reality. It has meaning and purpose for us today. What if you are where you are to move your world a bit closer to how it should be? I think that's the power I read in Jesus' words. He talks about a future. It could easily go, yes, Jesus, okay, well, we'll just wake us up when that comes. But then you start to read and listen with a different ear, and you kind of go, oh, you're asking us to join that. And not just join it then, but join it now. You have a task. You have a mission. You have a God who's inviting you today to bring about new creation right where you are. I want to pray for you and pray for your task and pray for the places that God has sent you, and then we'll close with song today. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, thank you that you have sent us, that you have given us a task and a mission in the world. And first, you've called us to say yes to Jesus. I'm just so struck by that practice we did earlier, God, of giving our surrender to you, of something we probably don't stop enough and do. I pray that we would continue to do that through this last song, through these ways we can get connected, through a benediction. But even as we move beyond those today, God, I pray for us as a community of faith, as we move out of these doors, that we know and we get this sense in this awareness that we're moving deeper into mission, that we're moving as people who are sent in this city, in this world, in our homes, in our workplaces, God, that to bring a glimpse of a new world. My heart is heavy listening to my friends as they suffer through a world that seems chaotic, and I can imagine, God, the stories in this room. Would we start to be that change? Would we start to move the world a bit closer to the picture of the future that you've set out? Thank you for Jesus. Thank you for the grace that starts that new creation. It starts with you, and we're following you along to bring about new creation wherever we go. So we surrender ourselves, God. We say we need you. We give ourselves fully to you as we go as people sent into the world to move it a bit closer to how it should be.